Blog Talk Radio.
My name is Paula Thompson, and with me is my dear friend and co-host, Krystalyn Beek Larson. Hi, Krystalyn.
Hi, Paula. Good morning.
I'm glad you're with us today.
Thank you.
Always,
I'm glad to be here.
Glad. Yeah. And I don't know if Andre's planning to come on in a little bit, or is he have to work today?
You know? I didn't hear.
I didn't either. Maybe this is Andre. Hold on. Andre, is it you?
It sure is.
Good morning,
everyone.
Good morning.
Co-host interrupt us today.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, good to have you guys on. And we are getting ready for our show next week, which is with Brian McLaren. And we want to build up to this. We've had a lot of shows in the past about emergent Christianity, and I know that all three of us are really excited about the aspect or the prospect of emergent Christianity and the things that they're doing. And the deeper we dig into this movement, the more exciting it becomes. I mean, it's just amazing. The people who are involved are amazing, and the things that they are doing is amazing. And
One of my favorite quotes, just to interrupt briefly, from Brian McLaren in this series, he says, you know, we seem to think that with Christianity and with churches, we need to choose between intelligence on ice or ignorance on fire.
Mm.
And he says one of the things they're trying to create or make possible is intelligence on fire.
That's the right combo. And so, you know, Krystalyn interviewed on Thursday Tony Jones. Tony couldn't make it on Saturday, so we did a pre-interview with him. Krystalyn did a great job with that. I wasn't able to stay on, but what I heard was great, and I'm actually looking quite forward to hearing it this morning. It's about a half an hour. We're going to play it here in just a sec. But, Krystalyn, do you want to set it up for us?
Well, I heard about a program that Sparkhouse was putting out called Animate Faith, that Tony is sort of one of the organizers or spearheaders of this project. And it features seven different emergent ministers, authors, presenters on different topics. And it's designed to be used in either a church or community study group, adult ed, or home church setting. But it's designed to get the congregation or the audience or the students involved in the sermon process, in the process of discussing and questioning and beginning to look at some of these big theological questions or philosophical issues. And it's designed to get individuals involved as opposed to sort of just sitting back and listening to a sermon. And Tony's going to talk a little bit about his own background because I didn't want to flub up his bio for him. So he starts out at the beginning of the program talking a bit about, you know, what his background and what his passions are and how he defines his work. And I know him primarily as a blogger, and I met him personally at Christianity 21 a few years ago, and when I met him and Doug Padgett and several other of the people who are involved in this program. And so I'm real excited about it, and I thought I'd really like to give Sparkhouse a boost and this program an opportunity to reach some new ears on this program. And I guess that's sort of the launch.
Okay, great. So should I go ahead and play the interview now?
Sure.
Okay, let's give it a shot. It's about 30 minutes long, so.
And we should have some of the other presenters and possibly some of the other participants calling in within the next half hour to an hour.
Okay, good. And also, you know, I posted the website on the board. If you want to view these, what is it, 7 speakers that are offered right now?
Yep.
Yep. And,
it's a 7-session series.
Yep, 7-session series. It's excellent. I was watching it this morning, enjoyed it a lot. You can find that at wearesparkhouse.org, and it's called Animate Faith. So without further ado, here is Tony Jones and an interview that Crystalyn recorded with him on Thursday.
Hello. Radio.
Hello, this is Crystalyn Beek-Larson with Cosmic Citizen. Hi, Paula.
Hi.
I have you on the air with myself and Tony Jones, and I just want to give a quick introduction to Tony. Tony is an author, a theologian, blogger, and a co-founder of Jopa Productions. And I met him a few years back at Christianity 21 in Minneapolis.
That's
and
right.
Tony also calls himself an ecclesiologist.
That's right.
Maybe you can explain what that means, Tony.
Well, I have it defined on my website as an ecclesiologist is like being a proctologist for the church. So I go places nowhere else. Nobody else wants to go, but somebody's got to go there.
Well, that's a very vivid description. So Tony is joining us today on Cosmic Citizen to talk a little bit about a new program that he's promoting called Animate Faith, which was very intriguing to me. And I've looked into it a little bit, but I'm hoping, Tony, that you'll be willing to give our listeners a bit more of a well-rounded overview of what that program is. And maybe you want to start with just giving a little bit about your background.
Sure, I'd be happy to. I live in Minnesota, and it's where I was raised. I live just a couple blocks from my parents, actually, and am a proud and happy Minnesotan. My education is at, I got my undergrad degree at Dartmouth College. I went on immediately to Fuller Seminary and got a Master of Divinity. And then from there, I spent 10 years doing ministry in a church setting and in a mission you do it running youth mission trips. And then after 10 years of that, I went back to school one last time to get a PhD at Princeton Seminary in New Jersey, and completed that finally in 2011 after kind of a long period of doing some other, you know, writing when I probably should have been writing my dissertation, but I wrote other books instead. So, yeah, like you said, I make some trouble with Doug Padgett. We co-own a business, and we speak at events together quite often, and we're both part of Solomon's Porch, which is a Christian faith community in the Twin Cities. And I do, I write books, I blog every day at Patheos, I speak quite often, and then another part of my professional life is that I work for Sparkhouse, which is a publishing imprint of Augsburg Fortress, the publishing house of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. And the product that you're talking about is Animate Faith. It's one of the kind of hallmark products of this young entity called Sparkhouse, in which we're really trying to be a multi-denominational publisher. As you might guess, for traditional mainline publishing houses like Augsburg Fortress, there's not probably, well, it's a shrinking market as mainline Christianity shrinks, and as traditional publishing, you know, print publishing, kind of goes the way of the dodo bird, too, it seems, then they've just been reaching out and trying to figure out how can we engage more congregations with excellent materials beyond the ELCA. And that's,
right.
You know, when they brought me and some other people in, and that's where Animate came from.
Cool. Well, it looks very appealing to me. I mean, just from what I've seen of it. And
I think that it would appeal to a lot of Cosmic Citizen listeners, because it's got the kind of people who you've either had on the show or probably will have on the show in the future, people like Brian McLaren and Lillian Daniel and Nadia Boltz Weber and Mark Scandrett and others. So it's 7 sessions long. It's meant to be used primarily in congregational setting, although obviously people could use it in the home as well. And, it, you know, each session has a video that's 8 to 9 minutes long where the presenter, some of those names of those people I just mentioned, have a pretty intriguing script that they go through on this video. And there's this wonderful animation, which, Crystalline, you'll remember from Christianity 21 that Paul Supase did live sketching through that entire event.
That was so cool. That was
one
of the most original things I had ever seen.
Yeah, I'm glad to report that he's going to be live sketching again at our event called Emergence Christianity in Memphis in January. That's going to be about Phyllis Tickle's new book. But Paul,
I'm actually hoping that I'll be able to get to that.
Yeah, I know. I knew that, and I hope to see you there too. So Paul provided these live sketches. So each of the presenters, and people can go on to wearesparkhouse.org and see samples of all the videos from Animate. And you'll see that each of these presenters, each of them a pastor or theologian in their own right, talks into the camera, but behind them on a white screen are Paul's sketches as he kind of illustrates the very things that they're talking about on camera. So it's really a beautiful combination of words and imagery. And then he also provided sketches for the what we call the journal, which is, you know, what kind of in an adult kind of curriculum, it's the piece that the learner uses to sketch out their ideas, ask questions, answer questions, you know, look something up in the Bible or on Wikipedia and make some notes and then bring it to the group. And then there's also a facilitator guide that helps group leaders kind of work through the curriculum too.
Cool. And tell our listeners, if you would, how a pastor, a congregation, or a study group or religious community might access this program.
Well, it's easy to get. I mean, if you need to access it by, like, getting a copy of it, very easily
done.
Yeah,
how do they use it?
They use it, you know, people are pretty creative, I find, who lead adult education in congregational settings. So we've heard so far of groups using it in the traditional way of, like, you know, there's an adult education hour before worship on Sunday morning. A lot of congregations have been using it that way. I know that some
are
using it.
That's how we do in our church.
Sure, that's probably the most common way. Other churches have a Wednesday night, you know, the same time that ninth graders are in confirmation, there's an adult class. But here's what's interesting. We found that there's a lot of interest in using this curriculum for upper high school students as well. So we've got a lot of youth pastors using it, kind of for the kids who've already been through confirmation, maybe juniors and seniors in high school. We've had other people use it in home groups, like, you know, home small groups and Bible studies. So there are a lot of different ways that that people have incorporated it into their spiritual life.
And if you could sort of give us the nuts and bolts of it in a brief overview, what would you say it includes?
Well, here's the thing. I think that a lot of congregational resources that are out there, they usually either have really nice design and theology that some of us who are more progressive are a little uneasy with, so we kind of hold our nose or cross our fingers behind our back and use that curriculum. Or we find resources that have the theology that we concur with, but it's really not designed very well. It's kind of seems like it was thrown together in a bad word processing program.
Right.
And, you know, when we at SparkHouse look around at the most innovative companies out there, like, let's say, Apple, you know, the richest company in America right now, they're somehow able to both have very high design and have really excellent content or actual resource. So, you know, not only is the iPhone or an Apple laptop computer or the iPad a very well-designed and beautiful product that's aesthetically pleasing, but it also works well. Like, it does what you want it to do. So we're trying to develop resources for congregations and children and youth and adults that have that same kind of high design and it does what it does what you want it to do. It's a resource that actually works. So in Animate, it's kind of the first, you know, this is the first of what we hope will be several series of Animate. And this first series is kind of an intro to Christianity. It's 7 sessions long. We've got Brian McLaren talking about God. Who is God? How do we understand God? God, you know, the incomprehensible creator of the universe, and yet we need to talk about God. So that's what Brian talks about. Shane Hipps talks kind of about spirituality and religion and existence and salvation, kind of what are we here for and what are we trying to be saved from and what are we trying to be saved to. Lillian Daniel talks about, do we really need organized religion? Bruce Reyes Chow talks about, what's the point of going to church? Nadia Boltz-Weber talks about the cross, the meaning of the cross at the center of Christianity. And Lauren Winter talks about the Bible. Like, what in the world is this
funny book that we keep going back to and looking for answers in. So those are the sessions, and you can tell by those names, you know, we've got an Episcopal priest who's a professor at Duke. We've got a megachurch pastor. We've got a Presbyterian church planter. We've got a Lutheran. We've got a United Church of Christ pastor. We got, Mark Scandrett talks about following the Jesus way. Mark's kind of an itinerant missionary, creative poet. So it's really a wide variety of presenters presenting on what we think is kind of the core aspects of Christianity. So with that diversity in the presenters, you can imagine the point of view is not like laser sharp focus. It's not really about here's our perspective on Christianity. Now we want you and your congregation to buy it. It's more here are some very provocative presentations and a beautifully designed a journal for you to write and sketch out your thoughts in. That's designed to look like a moleskin, and these presenters are going to ask you a big question. They're not going to answer it. They're going to ask it, and it really is a sincere and earnest question. And we think, and what we've heard back so far from church leaders is it's working. It really catalyzes great conversation in those groups.
Wonderful. Well, it sounds like a very timely project.
Well, we hope so. I mean, these people we've got are very much leaders who are on the forefront of the church today. These are not like you see in some other, you know, adult type product. These are not people who've been around in the church world for 50 years and are now in their retirement. These are people who are, still pastoring churches and writing books and trying to make things happen. So I think it's pretty timely. And the topics, of course, in some ways are timely, but are also timeless. Like, do we really need organized religion? And, you know, what's the real meaning of the cross? So I hope it combines kind of a timeliness that feels relevant for today, but it also tackles issues that people in churches, you know, have wanted to talk about for a long time.
And often where either pastors or congregants have felt a difficulty about talking and about some of these issues. I mean, they haven't always been encouraged from the pulpit.
Yeah, I think that's right, and I think that in kind of center to left Protestantism in America, there's more and more openness to these questions.
You're breaking up a little bit there.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Could you repeat that?
Yeah, I think that a lot of people in progressive settings and progressive congregations are more and more interested in having really forthright conversations about and what they're interested in.
Absolutely. That's really true. And it certainly is what young people seem to want to talk about.
Well, you got to think that, you know, yeah, you know, we live in a world where people who are in their 20s have lived with the reality of Wikipedia throughout their educational lives, at least through high school and college. Wikipedia has been around. And that is, you
That's
know...
That's really amazing.
Right. It's an online collaborative encyclopedia. You know, so they're just simply used to being a part of a conversation about what truth is and what really matters. And
Indeed.
If you say, you know, if you say to somebody, oh, no, it's this way, this is what it's always been, I just think that what you're saying is right, that for younger people, they just live in a very participatory, collaborative culture And so I think that a church resource for adults that is, in its very nature, participatory and collaborative, where it opens room for conversation as opposed to foreclosing discourse, is really going to be helpful to a lot of congregations in, you know, getting younger adults, even upper high school people, to be involved in education. And let's be honest, even while people still go, you know, in very large numbers to worship in congregations, aside from a few congregations, most churches really struggle to get people engaged in adult ed, you know, to get them to go to adult ed classes, adult Sunday school. That's a real struggle for a lot of congregations. So I think, I hope this really reaches a felt need in a lot of churches, to have a resource that's well designed, that's snappy, that's fun, that's video based, and that will, like you suggest, engage younger people.
Mhm. Yeah, I think that's really important, and you know, it's sort of, we have to sort of go that way. Because the culture has changed in some really important ways. And, you know, the church probably has to be more fluid, as Phyllis Stickle says. You know, we're in a age of transformation of the church. It's undergoing another sort of epic change in its structure and nature, and this more collaborative or more conversational experience in church seems to be an important aspect that young people are looking for.
I just have so much static.
I'm afraid I'm barely able to hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Are you in a windy place by any chance?
No, I'm not in a windy place, and I have 5 bars on my phone, so I don't know what's going on.
Well, with any luck, it's just my line, which it could very well be.
Yeah,
I have some problems sometimes with my line. So if you can hear things clearly, then maybe it's just on my end.
I can hear you
with
just
any
fine.
Luck.
Yes. I'm with Phyllis. You know, I agree with Phyllis. And we are in a transformational age in the church. So many other things around us are changing so rapidly. And the church, as you know, everybody kind of knows and acknowledges, the church really struggles to make changes. I think a lot of people who go to church, they expect the church to be the one institution in their lives that doesn't change. And
right. That's
problematic. That's problematic because everything around us is changing. Media is changing. Education is changing. You know, the church ends up getting stuck in some pretty bad company with institutions like government and military that has a really hard time changing and keeping up with the times because it's so entrenched in bureaucracy. But, you know, American business changes. American media changes. So the church...
American culture is undergoing almost a constant change.
Right. So the fact that we think, well, you know, we can still get up on Sunday morning and deliver a 25-minute monologue sermon and not allow anybody a chance for dissent or commentary or feedback.
Or feedback or questions.
Yeah. You know, that's just living on borrowed time. I mean, people now, you know, my dad used to throw his shoe at the television during the Vikings game because the Vikings were playing so poorly. Well, now we've even seen it this week. There was such an uproar, an outcry from NFL fans over a botched
ball. Over what happened with the Green Bay game?
Yeah, And now what did it do? It forced the NFL to bring back the officials, to bring back their unionized referees. And
right.
I'll tell you what, that wouldn't have happened 40 years ago when I was growing up. My dad would have thrown his shoe at the television, and maybe the sports columnist would have griped about it in the paper the next day. But now Twitter and Facebook and blogs and everything else blew up with criticism of the NFL, and they were basically forced to reconsider and to bring back the referees. So, you know, that's just the kind, you know, my kids are being raised in a world in which feedback, you know, they expect their voice to be heard on every single topic. For good and for
yeah.
ill, right? We may not like that, but it is the way it is. So how long is a preacher going to be able to stand up, clip a microphone onto his robe and say, I get to talk for the next 25 minutes and nobody else does? It's just, you know,
what I say is doctrine.
Right. And you know, I teach, this evening I'll be teaching a seminary class. And I went to seminary, and seminary was mainly, like every other version of academia for me, me sitting and listening while somebody else talked. Like, that's how seminary education went. That is not how I teach. I do not lecture. And I think most of the professors at the seminary with me do not lecture, because that's not what students expect. They want to be engaged in their own learning process. And I want them to be, of course. So,
good teachers want their students to be engaged.
Yeah, that's right.
And really, as pastors, we're really just glorified teachers, you know, in the old days, it was mostly pastors who did all the teaching.
Yeah.
Well,
and there was a day, right? There was a day when the pastor, in Jonathan Edwards' time, the pastor was the most educated man in the village in colonial times. And so, yeah, he truly was an authority on the Bible, on philosophy, on literature, on most things.
The times when few people could even read.
Yeah, right.
You know, that was a really important, that played a really important function back then.
Yeah. And, of course, that's not the case anymore. The pastor is not the most educated person in the village anymore. Now lots of people are very well educated. A lot of, you know, you may have a master's degree and you're preaching to a room including people with PhDs. So they are,
well,
by
one
definition,
of the things. Go ahead.
Well, they're by definition more educated than you as the pastor. So what position does that put you in? Well, I would hope that would put you in the position of being a co-learner along with the people in the congregation.
Yeah, some kind of facilitator. Yeah, and I think about the way Jesus learned. You know, the culture that he grew up in. It was very much more the Jewish tradition, which includes much more debate, study, and discussion.
Yeah.
You know, the yeshiva kind of tradition.
Also called the Socratic method, that's right.
Exactly, and he would hardly have been one who would have been very sit there and be quiet and listen kind of a guy.
Right.
I mean, I'm sure as a child he probably was a little more that way, but you know, you see him taking on the rabbis in the synagogue in his day and age, and asking questions that often were quite discomforting to them.
Yeah.
So it does seem like we come by this tradition honestly.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and I'm not going to be so arrogant as to say that, this curriculum that I worked on is, you know, of the same pedagogy that Jesus used, but
I think you're right. We're in a long line of people who want to process and think and argue and persuade, and yeah, that's hopefully what this is all about.
And we're evolving. I mean, I don't think there are that many of us who would argue that we're not growing. And, you know, change isn't always forward moving, but, you know, given enough time, it tends to go that way.
Yeah, right.
Well, I know you don't have... Go ahead.
Well, I appreciate you having me on, and I will. I'll see if we can't get one or two of the presenters whose names I've mentioned to call into the program and also chat with you about it a little bit.
Well, that would be wonderful. We would be very grateful. I'm very enthusiastic about promoting this to our listeners and
to some other pastors.
And
yeah, I appreciate that a lot. It really is great, and I think that. People who try it will become very fond of it very quickly.
Great. Well, I know you don't have very much time to talk with us today, so I'll be happy to let you go. But if there's anything else you'd like to add
before you go, I don't want to cut you off. Yeah, I just want to remind people that if they go to wearesparkhouse.org, they will be able to find more information about Animate, see video clips, get a PDF sampler of the journal and the facilitator guide. So there are a lot of resources available for people who just want to like check it out and look at it a little more closely to see what this is all about.
Wonderful. And then if they do decide that it's something that they'd like to incorporate in their own study group, community, or ministry, their congregation, is there information there about how to go about ordering the program?
Yep, it's very there are big buttons all over the place where you can buy the curriculum. So that'll be no problem for people. We'll ship it right out to you.
All right, wonderful. Well, thank you so much for joining us today on Cosmic Citizen.
Thanks for having me. You're welcome back
anytime. So please keep me informed of other programs that you have coming up so I can keep our listeners informed.
Great, and I hope to see you in Memphis in January.
I hope so, too, God willing.
All right, yes.
Thanks
right,
again, Tony.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
So that was a wonderful interview there, Crystalyn.
Thank you. And thanks to Tony.
I wish he could be with us to answer more questions today. But, with any luck, we'll have a phone call from Shane pretty soon or Bruce to talk a little bit more.
Well, we do have one. I'm not sure what it's area code 602, so I'll go ahead and put 602 on. I know the other two callers are just listening in, so let's put on area code 602. Area code 602, you're with us on the Cosmic Citizen.
Hi, this is Shane.
Hi, Shane.
Good morning.
Thanks
good
for joining us today.
Glad to be joining you.
Well, how did you get involved with this project?
I got a call from Tony Jones about a project he was working on. He was trying to put together a curriculum and asked if I'd be interested in contributing, and was glad to do so. When he told me what they were planning, I was really sort of excited to be a part of it. I trust Tony a lot, and I think there are, having been a pastor, there's a lot of adult curriculum out there that isn't great, and I felt like I trusted what they were trying to do, that they would create something pretty cool.
Before I get into asking you some more personal questions, I want to just tell our listeners, if you go to the Animate website, it's animate.wearesparkhouse.org/animate/the-course/. You can actually listen to intros to each or a preview of each of the videos so that you can sort of get a feel for the flavor of each of the different speakers and how the videos are formatted. Okay.
And also, Crystalyn, we should mention that Shane Hipps is on the phone with us right now, and Shane has done one of the courses called Salvation, Abundant Life Now, and is one of the featured speakers on those seven tastes of what's available. And Shane, just so you know, you're on right now with Crystalyn Beek Larson, Paula Thompson, and Andre Rodatis. So it's
Thank
good
you.
To have
Glad
you
to be
on.
With you.
Thank you. Okay, continue. So
did you have me?
Yeah, you've got the floor,
so
Shane.
So take it away, Shane.
What would you like to talk about?
Well, maybe you could just give us a thumbnail on your first of all your session title, and then maybe we can backtrack and look at how you got into this and what you see your future as being, not only with Animate Faith but with the emergent Christian movement, you know, as a whole. So your title here is Salvation, Abundant Life Now, and you're the fourth in that series. And what can you tell us about how you approach that as the fourth vignette of this new Eye on Faith that is really focused on getting young people involved?
I think one of the first things that all of us were tasked with was trying to figure out ways to crack open some of the categories that have become calcified over the centuries around certain belief structures. And so what I offer is not so much a final answer but a first word. And that first word hopefully sparks conversation, as Tony talked about. So what I did was began to frame one of the things I've always found fascinating about the way Christendom has divided itself around this issue of salvation. So there is one group of Christians that has a tendency to understand certain parts of the Bible, elevating certain parts of the Bible while suppressing others. And they come to the conclusion that salvation is a gift you get after you die, and it's mostly a personal gift, individual. Mm-hmm. Then there's another group of Christians that has a tendency to suppress other parts of the Bible and elevate others, and they have a belief that salvation is really a word to describe a corporate reality in this life. It tends to focus on geopolitical structures, war and peace, justice, those kinds of issues. So what you have is this fascinating dichotomy between a good news that is either for an individual after they die or good news for a society while they live. The reason I find that interesting is the thing that Jesus talked about more than almost anything else in his ministry was this thing called the kingdom of heaven or the kingdom of God in different gospels. It uses different words. And the way he describes that, there's only one thing, only one time that he describes it really directly. Everywhere else, it's always in parables and analogies. But the direct description that Jesus gives to Pharisees when they ask, where is it? When is it coming? He says, you will not find it in things observed, for the kingdom of heaven is within you. And this is the thing that I use to try to begin to describe my section on salvation, to indicate that, in fact, my belief is that Jesus came to proclaim a salvation now that begins within you. And this is what he promised. The kingdom of heaven is an abundant life that begins the day you're born, not the day you die.
That's wonderful. You know, what strikes me about that, it's really focusing on the kind of religion that Jesus had, personal religion. You know, his religion, you know, if you want to boil it all down, you know, was not what he grew up with Judaism, though that may have informed him. It was all about his personal relationship with the Father.
Yeah, I probably would even go so far as to say I'm not convinced he was all that interested in religion one way or another. I don't think he was opposed to it. He operated within it. But his primary interest is what truly makes us fundamentally human. Jesus had some capacity to introduce us to something inside that is so abundant, so indestructible, so boundless, so profound, that's why people were willing to follow him. This
I agree.
Is, I think, is extraordinary.
Well, and you know, when you, I love the word salvation because it's just that word is thought-provoking. the word salvation is deeply thought-provoking for any human, because I think the first thing you want to say to yourself is, well, you know, why do I need to be saved? What am I, what is Jesus or any religion here to save me from? And oftentimes, you know, we get to that point where we think that salvation means saved from God. But I have come to the conclusion that it means saved for God, saved from ourselves, our own tendency to take that beautiful well of living water that resides in each of us and not poison it with fear and you know, doubt and shame and blame and all the things that poison that beautiful well of living water, that kingdom within each human being that Jesus was trying to show us, that Jesus was trying to, you know, illuminate for us so that we'd realize that we don't need to look without of ourselves all the time, for the salvation that we seek is within, and it's personal, and it's beautiful, and it's readily available for all of us. And so, you know,
and like
it's just
that
word.
Abundant.
Yeah, it's abundant. Just the word salvation is so thought-provoking, and I love this whole idea to just provoke the thought, to ask the question and let the discussion happen. I know you guys, that's what you guys are about, really. And my hat's off to all of you, because the conversation needs to happen. People need to start thinking for themselves about what this stuff means. You know, what does that word salvation mean to you? And because the kingdom of God is within all of us, and because we can join in the conversation and share those insights, and that's beautifully rich and satisfying. And it is the, you know, and I think that's what Tony was talking about, this idea of the minister who stands up and holds court versus the new paradigm, which is more collegiate, where everybody shares what inspires them. So, and I noticed I watched your video, Shane, and I was provoked by this idea that we have 25,000 days, and I want to go in and listen to the rest now. I wonder if you could expound on that a little bit.
Yeah, at the heart of what I'm interested in is this reality that every human on the planet, when they're born, has been given both a gift and a curse, and the gift is consciousness. And that's also a curse, because it's quite frightening. And what makes us different from dolphins or donkeys is that we are actually aware of the fact that one day we did not exist and one day we will not exist. We are conscious of the fact that one day we return to the dust. And this is a rather striking, haunting reality. And it is this awareness that I believe drives every religion in the history of the world. They're trying to answer the crisis of meaning and the problem of death. Why do we exist? Why are we here? And my observation came from a teacher of mine who simply said that if you actually calculate the number of days that the average lifespan is, if you live to 70, it's about 25,550 days. If you live to 100, it's about 35,000 days. So if that were money and somebody gave you $35,000, you might be impressed. But if somebody said that's all you'll ever get, you might recognize how unbelievably small that is. And for those of us who are past the age of 25, many of the days are already gone.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't come back. So with each day, we lose a dollar. It never comes back, ever. Why are you given each of these days? And what is it that we are missing in each of those days? And I think it's one of the things Jesus hoped to introduce us to, was what he called the spring of eternal life. That is not something he talked about exclusively in the future tense. Yeah, it's a reference in the future tense, but as often he spoke about it in the present tense. Not only present, but present and continuous. The Greek verbs are springs welling up in an ongoing way in the present tense? My question is, how many of us are asleep to the abundant, eternal life welling up in this very moment? And what would it mean to become conscious of it and to drink from it and find the life that we long for?
Indeed.
Yeah. Well, and part of what you were alluding to, I loved your phrase, the difference between, you know, us and dolphins or donkeys. This awareness of life after death, the awareness that there may be something greater than ourselves, and you know, I would maintain as well, as I'm sure you do, that when you explore that, it doesn't become just an open-ended question. It becomes a surety by actually pursuing that inner life, and that really is the essence of the human condition, that somehow, yes, we have a lot of animal tendencies, and yes, we have a tendency that transcends what animals are. We have the ability to be aware of ourselves, of the fact of our own future and demise, but more importantly, we have an awareness that there seems to be something much more than us, that if we pursue, we get a greater and greater inkling, and then surety, and then finally certainty and certitude that there really is a God, and that the nature of that God is loving, as Jesus informed us that God is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, are you familiar with each of the different segments of this program?
Yeah, I am. We actually got to sit around. One of the cool things that they did at Spark House was they had all of us come in on a single day and read our scripts to one another so that we could begin to sharpen each other. And it is one of these rare experiences where, as a content person, as a person who creates teachings or ideas or whatever, you rarely get a chance to get edited by some of the brightest people in the country or in
by
the world.
That kind of a think tank.
Yeah, so it was really, really stimulating for all of us, actually. I think we all kind of noted, wow, that was a surprising gift that Spark House gave us that I think only improved what it was they were trying to create.
So you had the opportunity to experience it all firsthand, part of the program, but the whole program.
That's right, and then we all went back and did rewrites, because each of us then gave feedback on everybody else's script. So they'd be like, that part was slow, I didn't understand that, that's too many things. So it was great, it was really fun.
Wonderful. What were some of your favorite parts of it? Personally.
Of the experience of creating it, or
of going through it together.
My favorite part is you very rarely get a chance to spend a whole day with people that you really admire and respect and are a fan of. These are friends, but they're also people I'm a fan of. And so it was a lot
they're
of fun.
They're sort of friends and mentors at the same time.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Absolutely. So we all had sort of a lot of fun together, and when you feel on some level like you're at the tip of the spear of a perspective on faith that meets with no small amount of resistance, it's a lot of fun to meet with kindred spirits. Now I come out of my tradition and my context, which was Mars Hill Bible Church most recently, is really coming right out of a very conservative evangelical tradition and backing. Most of the people that I met with there, most of the voices tend to be in a bit more of a mainline context. So they maybe had a different experience than I had, but that was the thing that I enjoyed most, was the sense of camaraderie and connection.
Tell us a little bit more about your ministry now, or the work that you're doing now outside of this project.
Yeah, I recently left Mars Hill Bible Church. I was the teaching pastor there for a couple of years. So, shared the stage with Rob Bell, and he left. And then about a year later, I decided to leave based on some changes that were going on at the church that I think were right for the church, but ended up not being the right fit for me. So I kind of began to explore my calling beyond the church. And so now what I'm doing is I travel, speak, and I'm writing. So I have a book that's coming out in a month, and then another book I'm starting to work on now.
Can you tell us about the book that's just about to be released? Because
Sure.
We talked about having you come back on in a couple of weeks to sort of launch that. But if you wouldn't mind just giving us a little flavor of it now, that'd be great.
Sure. The book is called Selling Water by the River. And the subtitle is A Book About the Life Jesus Promised and the Religion That Gets in the Way.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Great title and great concept.
Well, yeah, let's hope. So I had a lot of fun doing that, and that is effectively some of the elements that you'll see in the Spark House video or the anime video are also found in the book. The book expands in a different way and takes on a lot of other issues in the life of faith. And my conviction in this book is that Jesus and the religion that bears his name are not the same thing. And just because Christianity claims Jesus as its own does not mean Jesus turns around and claims Christianity as his own.
Huh.
And it's not that he's opposed to it. It's just that he can do his work independent of it. And we have the privilege of participating not by virtue of our name that we bear, but by virtue of our practice and whether or not we're actually aligned with what Jesus is already doing in the world. And so my interest is to try to help people decouple these things so that we don't feel quite so entitled to our truth and have an awareness that our constructs around Jesus are just that, constructs, concepts. They're not bad to have. They're only bad if they get in the way of the actual water you want to drink. And so Selling Water by the River is borrowed from a Zen koan, which is Zen is selling water by the river, and I just simply observe the same truth about Christianity, that there's an intermediary that emerged that sometimes builds the biggest barriers to the very thing it wants to provide.
You know, that's such a almost a constant quandary that we find within all religions and within all seekers, in the lives of all seekers. There seems to be that sort of the word is escaping me right now, but contradiction or innate conflict that we sort of have to struggle with in order to get to the clear water.
Mm-hmm. And what you just said, Shane, reminds me of a fundamental question for me, and I think maybe for a lot of people who are thinking about these things, and that is, what was Jesus' religion? Because he said, before Abraham was, I am. So he had a religion before he came here. What was it? And I think that's the religion we want to emulate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I wonder, what would you say to that?
Of Jesus was clearly Jewish. He was a very religious person. I mean, he did the religious things that religious people do. And he never once talked about spirituality. So this isn't a call to become somehow more spiritual and less religious. This is a call to understand our fundamental humanity. This is what Jesus came to introduce us to, the exquisite and overlooked gift of what it is to be a human for a brief moment in time.
Mm.
So he's not opposed to religion. I don't think he's opposed to religion, but I don't think he advocates for Christianity any more than he would Judaism or another religion.
Well, and
I think we'd agree with you on that.
Yeah, because so many religions are religions of authority, so they kind of take on a construct and force it, try to force these beautiful human experiences into this mold. Even if, and as you said just a moment ago, you left the church because there were changes, and the changes were good for the church, but they weren't good for you. And it takes a lot of courage to step out of that mold and or whatever that construct is and say, that's good for them, but it's not good for me, and I'm going to go down here because I feel like this is better for me. And I think Jesus would applaud that, because I think Jesus was courageous in that respect. And in fact, you know, that's what got him killed as a heretic.
Campaigning for the religion of the spirit.
Right.
Instead of the, you know, and also really championing the reality of personal religious experience for
right.
each individual wherever they are.
Which I think
yep.
Shane just described as being that wonderful, original human experience, that human life that is so precious that, you know, if we only get 25,000 days, and maybe some of us get even way less than that, as we know, but to make each one of those days mean something and count for something. And go ahead, Kristen.
I was just going to say, and we often share that quote, about, you know, are we really about the religion? Are we here to find out about the religion about Jesus or the religion of Jesus?
Right, which is a religion of personal spiritual experience and growing
and
in,
of being
in understanding.
The ultimate human experience. I mean, he
right.
he was so human.
And so divinely human. I mean, you know, it's as our friend Diane would say, the human divine mode, the HD mode. You know, we're moving into HD, human divine, where, you know, we can see, he shows us how divine a human can be. And there's such a beauty in that, such a beauty in his life.
Well, I would look forward to continuing this conversation in the future.
Absolutely. We invite you back anytime, but more specifically, let's try to schedule you in the next few weeks so that we can hear more about your upcoming book. It sounds really exciting. I think it's one that our listeners would really enjoy. And I know you don't have much time today to stay on air with us, so you know, feel free to go if you need to. But we also want to invite all of our listeners to call in if they have comments on this. Our phone number, again, is 646-716-8158. We're talking about an emergent program from Spark House called Animate Faith, designed to help spark the conversation of spirituality in your community, your religious and Christian community. So please give us a call and join in the conversation. We've been talking with Shane Hipps, the author of a new book called Selling Water by the River. And Shane, do you have a website or a blog you want to share before you go?
Actually, Shane already dropped off.
Okay.
But,
well, thanks for being with us, Shane.
Yeah, thank
yeah,
you, Shane.
Yeah, and I'd like to just thanks, Shane. You know, he's doing, and what all of the Animate Faith folks are doing is doing exactly what many of us have heard and read ought to be done, and that is that we ought to be representing to each generation anew the life and teachings of Jesus, so that that new generation can understand the life and teachings of Jesus. And it's not just a dead understanding. It's not just a belief-based understanding. It actually is an understanding that is faith-based. It's based in the person's experience with God. And, you know, had he stayed on longer, I might have asked Shane, so Shane, you know, what if we take religion, you know, since we talked about, you know, Jesus coming out of Judaism, and what if we take religion to be that personal experience? What
yeah.
if we take that back from institutionalized religion, and as we rightfully should, because the only true religion is personal religion. The only true religion is that living relationship with God as Jesus manifests that.
Right.
And of course, many other religious leaders manifest that, but Jesus manifested in a way that perhaps was for the first time an illustration of what unbroken communion with the Father could look like.
Exactly. You know, in this conversation, I have to say, brought me to a quote in the Urantia book, and I simply want to share it. I hope it's okay. It's from paper 132, The Sojourn at Rome. And it just is so fundamentally about Jesus and his pedagogy. I thought that was a very interesting point that Shane made, what Jesus' pedagogy was. Wow. If we could just wrap our minds around that. As we go out to do exactly what you just said, Andre, and that is help people find the living Jesus, you know, and reinterpret him for each new generation. But this says, always the burden of his message was the fact of the Heavenly Father's love and the truth of his mercy, coupled with the good news that man is a faith son of this same God of love. Jesus' unusual technique for social contact was to draw people out and into talking with him by asking them questions. The interview would usually begin with by his asking them questions and end by their asking him questions. He was equally adept in teaching by either asking or answering questions. As a rule, to those he taught the most, he said the least. Those who derived most benefit from his personal ministry were overburdened, anxious, and dejected mortals who gained much relief because of the opportunity to unburden their souls to a sympathetic and understanding listener. And he was all that and more. And when these maladjusted human beings had told Jesus about their troubles, always was he able to offer practical and immediately helpful suggestions, looking toward the correction of their real difficulties. Albeit, he did not neglect to speak words of present comfort and immediate consolation, and invariably would he tell these distressed mortals about the love of God and impart the information by various and sundry methods that they were the children of this loving Father in heaven. Oh, Jesus' pedagogy. I love that thought, especially, you know, for
you
us,
mind,
Andre, because... Go ahead, Kristen.
I was just going to say, do you mind defining that for our listeners?
What?
What you mean by a Jesus' pedagogy?
Well, how he taught. What methods, and I think that quote, that's what made me think of that quote when Shane said that, was, you know, this really is in essence the heart of it. And you know, it starts with the idea of this spark to spark a conversation by asking a question.
Asking a question.
Right. And to have that question be so thought-provoking and insightful that it really gets a person thinking about these matters for himself or herself. And I think that's the key. Jesus really wanted to teach us how
to think for ourselves.
Right.
But how to think in a way that could utilize the spiritual resources within, that kingdom of heaven within. Don't you think?
Right. Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
How do we come by these answers when we begin to question, when we begin to ask these big questions internally? What is the product by which these answers come, or even some of the good questions come, if not from perhaps that spiritual influence in our mind?
Right. It really begs the question, you're leading us on a wonderful, thought-provoking kind of journey there, Paula. You know, what is it that Jesus' methodology, his pedagogy, his means of teaching, what does it illustrate? You know, when you dig down, when you look behind what Jesus is doing. And number one, we know that Jesus knew his fellow men and women. Mm-hmm. He learned in depth who they were. He considered his audience. but he didn't consider them just as an audience. He wasn't preaching to them. He was talking to people, you know, and he knew what people were. And beyond that, he also understood from the inside what people were. When we're in unbroken communion with the Father, and I won't pretend to have a lot of unbroken communion with the Father, but part of the human condition is having some communion with the Father, at least.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, there is no human condition without that. And that's really what we begin to understand. The fact that we're given personality, the fact that we're given this impetus toward a religious or an inner life, leads us to this desire, however faint the flicker at first, to want to have a relationship with God, or to have a relationship with something that we perceive is deeper or greater or higher than ourselves, however we try to, you know, envision that or feel that in our lives. And when we get to that point of realizing that, we begin to understand something. There's something peculiar that very few religionists talk about, but I think ought to be talked about more and more. And that is, when I have that relationship with God, I begin to suspect that others that are having that relationship with God, though they may interpret it differently in their minds, are feeling it similarly to me. They're not having all the same feelings, we're not having all the same experiences, but some of our experiences, and ultimately the reality we're contacting, is the same reality. And there's something that the spirit within does to corroborate that fact. The spirit within, you know, says to us, you know, you're having this experience, and when others say they're having this experience, they're having this experience too. It's sort of a reverse, an upside down means to acquiring knowledge when you compare it with the empirical nature of scientific inquiry. Scientific inquiry, I need to have evidence in the outer life that one experiment lines up with another. In the inner life, I get a sense that what I'm experiencing in my inner life is similar to what you must be experiencing in your inner life. And this ultimately was Jesus' genius. Is he trusted that. He knew that. And when you don't have to tell people something. You can ask them when you trust fully that they're having the same experience that you are,
mm-hmm.
and that they can have the same experience that you're having. That
or
was
a unique
Jesus'
version of their own experience.
Yes, but it's not about the interpretation. That's
mm-hmm.
the point. We're always as mindily dominated creatures, always looking for the differences. And what the wonderful thing, the unity of spirituality is that in our benighted human condition, we begin to get an illuminated view that, you know, maybe I'm not so terminally unique after all. Maybe others are a little bit like me. Maybe they get some of what I'm going through.
Don't you think that's what Shane meant when he's talking about Jesus wants us to have a really fully human experience?
Yes. Yes. A fully human experience means having that inner life with what we associate with, you know, the whole outer life of being a human being. It's not, we're not just animals. We are animals with spirit. And we don't get to know that except for having that spiritual relationship with God. Otherwise, we effectively become animals. If we don't have that spiritual connection, how can we realize what it truly means to be a human being?
So getting back to this concept or this topic of animate faith. What are some of these types of faith expanding questions, these sort of pointed questions that we can ask each other, that we can use to spark the conversation, to really get each other to dig deep and begin to access those personal mind and spirit resources? What are some of your favorite faith expanding questions?
Well, very, very much for me, it depends on who I'm talking to. I mean, what if anything, again, we learn from Jesus' pedagogy is he first considers his audience, if I want to look at it in those kinds of, you know, broad brush strokes. But what it really means is he considers who is right in front of him, who he's talking to. He pays attention to the personality, the unique new brother or sister that he's encountered, and he starts paying attention to who that person is. That's not easy to do, you know, with the inner distractions and outer distractions a lot of us have. But he indicated, and, you know, we learned from some of the best and you know, the most brilliant in terms of interpersonal intelligence, that a person feels most engaged and most loved when you're focusing your attention on them. And he did that, not as a technique, but because he sincerely was interested in who was in front of him. And by then paying attention to who that person was, he then got gleanings of where that person might be in their inner life, how they might think, what some of their outer life experiences might have been, and then would try to engage them. And again, what is that wonderful pedagogy? He doesn't tell them anything right away. He begins asking questions. He's literally interviewing them without a microphone. He's interviewing them and finding out more and more about them, and asking those questions in such a way as to indicate to the person that he's been paying attention to who they are. The questions are focused on them. They're not just broad brush questions. They're questions that indicate something about what he has gleaned about who that person is.
And he calls out the best in them because he believes in the best in them. He knows, as you were saying, Andre, knows the best in them is there. And so he speaks directly to it. And here's a good example, you know, what he said to the man who was abusing his wife. He said, "My friend, I perceive that something terrible must have happened to you. I very much desire that you tell me what could have happened to such a strong man to lead him to attack his wife, the mother of his children, and that right here out before all eyes. I'm sure you must feel that you have some good reason for this assault. What did the woman do to deserve such treatment from her husband?"
Yeah,
that's
right.
A perfect example.
Right.
He didn't say, "How dare you, man? What were you thinking?" He said, "You must have some good reason for this attack.
Yeah.
You know, I perceive that you're a good man. Why would you do this to your woman in front of all?" And, of course, the man was taken aback, and he had to say, you know, "She's not a bad woman. But she picks on me in public." You know, I mean, he always assumed the best. And I think what you said, Andre, is so poignant and true because, you know, when you listen to somebody, when you ask them a question, it's in the asking. The question shows that you really do care what they think.
Mm-hmm.
You're not. It's not rhetorical. Rhetorical questions are one thing, but when you're sincerely asking the question, you're drawing someone out because you really do care what they think. That communicates, "I care about you. I care what you think. I really want to know."
Yeah, what is really going on with you?
Yeah,
and there's
what
a,
do
there's
you
a tone of voice involved in the process of sincere seeking to learn about the other that is very different from a question that's really a veiled accusation or veiled hostility. You know,
or,
like, where have you been?
Yeah,
right. Or
to,
veiled,
exactly.
Veiled self-referential. You know, bring the conversation back to me, kind of stuff.
Right.
Which is a lot of what you get. You know, is you know, let me bring the conversation back to what I'm thinking about, which is a lot of what we get in
That's
most of
true.
Our interactions with human beings.
I think
and a
Bill
lot
Murray
of what we
said
do.
It. Bill Murray said it most when he said in one of his classic lines from a movie is, well, enough about me, let's talk about you. What do you think about me?
Yeah, right, exactly.
You
yeah.
know, it's a classic example of how that happens where the question is designed to bring the topic back to what I think about, and not what,
right.
you know, truly
uh-huh.
interested in what his fellows think, you know. Jesus
mm-hmm.
was truly interested in them. And you can, you know, I mean, wouldn't it be great if we could be more like that? Truly interested in our fellows. Truly interested in who they are and what they think and how they make their living and getting to learn all about them.
Yeah. Well, and it begs the question again, how could Jesus be so interested in his fellows? And let's just you know, for argument's sake, let's distill it down. Let's distort Jesus to be the human Jesus only. You know, we understand the divine Jesus may have come here with great, great love, but you know, part of his human condition was to achieve what it was like to be a human being.
Mm-hmm.
So how does a human being become so interested in other human beings in the way that Jesus did? And in my own thinking, I can only begin to imagine that it must have something to do. I mean, must it not have been about this unbroken communion he had with the Father? What does that unbroken communion really mean?
Mm-hmm.
It means communion with the source of love. You know, where if you are feeling loved truly because you have such faith in the Father and you fully understand how much that the Father loves you, not just understand, but you have the experience of the Father loving you, then you don't have to go and get those love needs filled, you know, sucking up the love wherever you go from whoever you find it from, you know. And unfortunately, part of our human condition, and I don't pretend not to be guilty of this, there are times, you know, I want to feel the love from another person. I want to feel the love from you know, some of the friends around me. I'd love for them to focus on me a little bit more. And, you know, part of that is my own lack of unbroken communion with the Father, because I'm sure if I had more of that communion with the Father, which I am trying to improve every day, I do focus on every day, but, you know, frankly, as distracted as my human condition is, I know that I fall away from that. So what's really happening? I fall away from my ever-present source of the love of God, and so part of the human condition is wanting to feel loved, wanting to be loved. And if I'm not getting it where I can only really, truly, fully get it, I start looking for it in other places. And
well,
I think that's a good deal of what we see in the world.
You're
entitled to be needy.
Huh? People don't care what you know until they know that you care.
Right. That was
mm-hmm.
Zig Ziglar who said that. And, you know, and Crystalline reminded me that if there's any of our listeners who have actually done the Spark House courses, the Animate Faith courses, please give us a call. We'd love to talk to you about your experience there. I plan to take it myself. I actually can't wait right now. I went and watched all of those little teasers, and I'm definitely intrigued. And we'll, you know, want to do it. And so just want to invite you, if you have taken the course and you'd like to call us and tell us about your experience, please do. Our number is 646-716-8158. And I just want to say, Andre, you know, that I think that love is a basic human need. It is so, so basic. I mean, gosh, it's like water and sunshine to a plant and earth. You know, you simply cannot live and thrive without it. And they've done study after study after study on babies who, what makes them thrive. And across the board, the thing that makes a baby thrive is attention and love from the mother and father. If a baby is picked up and cuddled and talked to and held and loved, that child thrives. Everything else in that child's life just seems to come together. Their appetite, their overall well-being, everything about them. If that child is not picked up and not cuddled and not talked to and played with, that child fails to thrive, and they've proven it over and over. So that is a basic human need, and I think it's okay to say, I need to be just today, I need somebody to pay attention to me. You know, I think we all need that, and we need it from other humans. God gives us that, that's true, and to a degree we are connected with that, and we have more to give our fellows. But it just feels good to be loved by your human associates. It just feels vital, and it feels like if you don't have that in your life, there is the biggest joy in life is missing. And we all want it, and this is a key. We all want that. We all want love. We all want forgiveness. We all want attention. We all want to be accepted. We all want to belong. And it seems like those very things that we all want the most are the things that sometimes we give the least.
Right.
I find that intriguing.
To just share a quote that Lou Bart just posted, no man is a stranger to one who knows God. In the experience of finding the Father in heaven, you should discover that all men are your brothers. And does it seem strange that one should enjoy the exhilaration of meeting a newly discovered brother?
I love that quote.
It really is an exciting experience to discover a new brother, new sister.
It is.
Imagine a new kindred spirit.
How that would feel if you found out, you know. I actually have a brother out there I've never met, a half-brother.
Really?
And, and it's been something that I've fantasized about many times, because I imagine that he probably looks a lot like my dad. And he's my father's son, and somebody I've always wanted to meet. I don't think I don't even know if he's still living, actually, but it intrigues me, so I love
that
quote.
Have you ever
because
made any inroads into searching for him?
No, not really. I mean, tried a little bit. When my sister was alive, she and I used to fantasize about it quite a bit, and even thought about, you know, asking for help to find him. And
well, with
current
research tools, it's not nearly as difficult as that used to be.
No, it really isn't. My dad and was married when before he went to World War II. He was in the Navy in World War II. And as happened to many of the servicemen, his wife and went and kind of got involved with another man. And when my dad got the news that she was going to divorce him and marry this other man, and they turned his son against him. and my dad went to visit them. They were living in a town not that far away, but it was about 120 miles away, and my dad took the bus there, and he got off the bus, and his son was 3 at the time, and he walked up the sidewalk, and the little boy was playing on the street. He was named after my dad as well. He was playing on the sidewalk there, and my dad walked up, and the little boy saw him and screamed and ran. And it broke my dad's heart so bad that he got back on the bus, and he told them, look, if the stepdad wants to adopt him, I'm fine with that. I'll sign the papers. I'm not going to terrorize this child. I can't bear for that to happen to him. And so he said, I'll sign the papers. This is what they wanted. They wanted him to be adopted by the new dad. And so my dad let him go. But to the day he died, he carried a picture of that little boy in his wallet.
Wow.
And I think about my dad. I think how much I love my dad. What a wonderful
What a great dad he was.
What a wonderful man he was. How loving he was. How kind he was. How, you know, I really get God is loving and kind because of him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, wow, what a sad thing that this little boy didn't get to know what a really great dad he had. Biologically, and I hope that his stepdad was all as kind as my dad would have been. They changed his name, you know, but so that, and I know I'm digressing, but that's why I love that quote. I think about that. Wow, how would it feel to me to discover this brother?
Yeah.
And that's about blood and biology, but what Jesus was talking about was the reality of the spirit. And that we are all kin. And somebody on the board earlier posted, and I think it was Pam. Hi, Pammy. I'm so glad you're on the board today. She posted that somebody likes to call it kindom, K-I-N. Drop the G.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was a good one.
Indeed.
The kindom of God.
The kindom of the Spirit.
Yeah, the kindom. So, there, you know.
Well, we've certainly had that experience, you know, when we have been interacting with other religionists, when we've been interacting with people at interfaith or emergent or integral philosophy gatherings, you know, when we're with groups of people who are genuine truth seekers, who are sincere believers from all faiths, who really do have a personal relationship with our Creator Father, that we have a sense of familial kinship. You know, I remember your story about meeting the lady in Cape Town, Paula.
Oh,
and
God.
You guys just hit it off because you both love Jesus. And within moments, you were discovering a new sister, a new sisterhood.
And she's in my heart forever. And here she was, you know, living her life she's from KwaZulu Natal. She's a Zulu woman, living her life in a village in Africa, teaching African men about Jesus. And they would tell her, oh, that's the white man's Jesus.
Oh, boy.
And she would say, oh, no. He's everybody's Jesus. He isn't just the white man's Jesus. Oh, she was such a delight. Her name was Sibwinge. I'll never forget her as long as I live. And hopefully, you know, I'll see her. If not in this life, I know in the next.
Yeah.
But
indeed.
Yeah. It's, you know, I just love that Shane talked about that human life and that dignity of human life and what a grand adventure it is and how beautiful it is, because that's my experience. As hard as it is, it's priceless.
Indeed. Very precious.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you deal with the unexpected exit of a family member,
on to the next life. And you see the impact that that person's life had on so many people, not just within your own biological family or your immediate community, but on a sort of extended community, extended group of people from his work, from all the different organizations he was involved in. It's like you just realize how precious a life can be, you know, how precious our humanity is when it's willingly and openly shared.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was really moved by that when Shane said, you know, we're talking about salvation now, you know, salvation here and now, not something you have to wait for. Not something you have to put off until a future lifetime,
mm-hmm.
but that it's starting from the moment that you're born.
And, you know, this is something that I have noticed about the emergent Christian leaders. They are on fire right now with a passion to speak these things.
And like Brian said, an intelligent passion on fire.
Oh, yes. And they have a lot to say. And the Spirit is moving them. The Spirit of Truth is moving them mightily. I mean, they are emerging. And they are finding, you know, the courage to say what they have to say. And they have a lot to say. And it's succinct, and it's meaningful, and it's thought-provoking. And I think this is why all of us, when we tune in to them, are blown away and just, oh, God, here they are. Wow, this is wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to join that conversation, obviously, because in a way, you, Andre, and me, and Crystalyn, and many of our listeners on the board already emerged some 20, 30 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We already walked away and said, wow, I know that works for you guys, and God bless you for that, but it doesn't work for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got to find something that does.
Yeah. It's being willing to trust that, you know, the entire world is a church. Or wherever one finds oneself alone with God is one's church, if one needs a church, or turn the other way around. You know, I mean, as our wonderful book tells us, you know, the riverbed is not to be despised. You know, paraphrasing, I mean, but the riverbed is not the river.
Not the river. Mm-hmm.
The river is that living spiritual experience, that personal religion. And, you know, I've begun co-opting the word religion again, you know, and saying, hey, that's not any institution's word. That's my word. You know, just because they got it wrong doesn't mean that I have to go ahead and abandon religion. I'm told over and over and over again that the only true religion is my relationship with God and yours.
Right.
That's it.
And as someone who is interested in you, I want to know all about your relationship with God. And I think that's what Jesus, you know, getting back to his pedagogy, was really saying, I want to know all about what you think of God.
Mm-hmm.
We have another caller. Shall we take this caller?
Yeah.
Okay. Area code 214, you're with us on Blog Talk, The Cosmic Citizen.
Hello.
Good morning.
Hello.
Hi, this is David from Dallas.
Hi, David.
Hi, David.
And I am really glad to find you folks.
Well, we're glad you called.
I just got into UB about 2 months ago, and I wondered why it took me so long.
Uh-huh.
That happens.
Yeah, had a spiritual awakening about in 1984 and been through quite a few things. But I just want to get in here and reiterate the true religion is just being able to inspire someone to make that connection with that spark inside.
Right.
Now,
So what are you saying exactly? What do you mean by that?
Well, I've been kind of walking through this, running into a number of religious people. What I find is religious people, when they find that you have that spark and that you've made that connection and that you're walking, the first thing they'll try to do is co-opt that and to get in between you and the Father and to get you into their deal.
Uh-huh.
If you don't do that, they'll discredit you.
Uh-huh.
Why do you
and
think they do
if that,
that
doesn't David? Work, they'll try to destroy you.
I know what you're talking about. I've had similar kinds of experiences.
I'm sure there are a lot of people listening who have been through the exact same thing.
Yeah.
You'll get into a heavy religious atmosphere, and they will drive spirit-driven people away.
Well, and that's true. You know, they won't drive them away from the spirit. They'll drive them away from company with them. I mean,
that's right.
If you approach your fellows with an intolerant attitude about what they feel, and it's just what we've been talking about, the technique Jesus employed was to communicate that he really cared what they think and to be sincerely interested in who they were and how they felt about things. The opposite of that, which and in that way Jesus drew them out and Jesus drew them into relationship with him and with the Father. The opposite of that, and I think what you've described, David, is pushing them away, driving them away by telling them, I don't care what you think. What you think does not matter. It has no value. And here's what I think. And if you don't think what I think, then
that's exactly
you're not
right.
worth knowing.
Yeah, you got to think what I think, and you got to do my deal.
Well, or you're not
yeah, you
one gotta of
us.
Yeah,
you got to do my deal.
That's
or
right.
you're not
right.
one of us.
Which is never about spirit, is it, David? I mean, it's just never about spirit for somebody to say, you need to believe as I believe.
That's right.
It's all about what's going on between two people's heads. And it's anytime there's a push toward uniformity, it really is about somebody's dominance. Whereas goals, values, spiritual experiences can all be shared in support of one's walk toward the Father.
It can support unity, not uniformity.
Exactly. Yeah, that just brings to I'm going through the UB as fast as I can, but I just read either Emmanuel or Gabriel's charge to Christ Michael before he came to Earth.
I just read that last night. Yeah.
Do not be an example, be an inspiration.
Right.
Right. Oh.
How big distinction.
That?
Yeah. And what with the spark of God, which I think they call the thought adjuster.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's a 1 foot distance, you know, in us, between us and God, and the thing in the way is self.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
If we can just be an inspiration to let somebody, you know, let that self dissolve away a little bit, they can make that connection, and then we get out of the way.
Yeah.
Right. And then the greater self takes over, really.
Yeah,
I mean,
when they make that connection with the Father, they can also, you know, see, hear, and obey.
Right.
So,
that's
anyway,
so
I am so glad to have found about he's found out about you folks, and I'll be tuned in every week.
Well,
how wonderful.
Call back often. We'd love to share the journey with you. That's the most exciting thing.
All righty. I thank you so much.
You bet.
Thank you so much, Dave.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
With your reading. Bye for now.
And, Dave, I wanted to tell you before you hung up, but if you're still listening, if you want to find out what our topics are going to be each week and who we're going to have on as speakers, you can join Fans of Cosmic Citizen group on Facebook, and we'll post it usually the day or night before about what the topic will be that weekend.
Sometimes even earlier than that.
Sometimes even in advance.
Rarely.
And like, for example, this next week we are going to have the very prolific writer, speaker, mega church pastor, ex-mega church pastor, and very prolific author, listed as one of the 25 most influential men in America a few years back, Brian McLaren. He's going to be with us next week talking about his new book, Why Did Jesus, Moses, the Buddha, and Muhammad Cross the Road? Subtitled Christian Identity in a Multi-Faith World. And we've been privileged to have this book for the last couple of weeks, and I can't tell you how much I'm enjoying it. I recommend that all of our listeners tune in for a very dynamic show next week. We're very excited about it. I've been trying to get Brian on the air for about 5 or 6 years. So I'm real thrilled about that.
What's the title of the book again, Chrislyn?
The book is called Why Did Jesus, Moses, the Buddha, and Muhammad Cross the Road? Christian Identity in a Multi-Faith World. And just to read a couple of the quotes, one from Richard Rohr on the back of the book, it says, I think Brian McLaren is a spiritual genius. Not only does he have the courage to say what must and can be said, but he says it with a deep knowledge of both scriptures and tradition, and then says it very well besides, in ways that both the ordinary layperson and the scholar can respect and understand. You can't get any better than that. And another another quote by Rabbi Michael Lerner. Many of us are big fans of his writing. Brian McLaren is the most creative Christian theologian and spiritual teacher writing and preaching today in the U.S. Yet, his universal message is as relevant to people of all faiths and none. As a Jewish theologian, I welcome this important contribution to showing the path through which all religions can become an emancipatory force for human liberation.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
I highly recommend this book. I mean, I just, it is so insightful. It is so well-written, thought-provoking. It's just what we're saying. And Brian, of course, is one of the people who gives the course on the website.
Yeah, his is the first course, site? Isn't it?
It is the first course, yeah. And yeah. God, Faith is a Quest is the title of his course. I'm just so thrilled about having Brian on. He's truly, truly an amazing teacher of truth. And what we've just been describing, somebody who's willing to go on the journey with us and have a dialogue, have a conversation with us. And he's just as open to, you know, all anybody's thoughts about these matters. And he gives such great food for thought in his book. I mean, it's really, really wonderful. And I know all of his books are wonderful. That's why he's a leader in the emergent movement and why he's, what did you say, one of the most influential men in America, Crystalline?
Yeah.
Because he's saying the things that need to be said. And he's saying
and he's got the courage to confront a lot of really entrenched concepts that have been,
mm-hmm.
in many ways, really divisive in Christianity. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, a house divided against itself cannot stand. And one of the things that has repeatedly acted as a deterrent to people looking at Christianity was the fact that it was so divisive. But it, you know, it had so many internal arguments against itself, against, you know, different denominations of Christianity. And one of the things that I'm really moved by, one of Brian's mentors said to him at one point when he was really frustrated with a particular interfaith tolerance issue, was that a religion is not judged by how it treats its members, but by how it treats its non-members.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And, you know, he talks about various personal experiences coming up against, you know, paradigm shifts in his thinking that are really quite moving and profound.
And he has a historical background that's just so invaluable. And this is something that I think, you know, we've seen this in Gumshoe, God's Gumshoe, too, who is a, you know, highly educated in the history of Christianity. And so he has great insights about the historical background. You know, most Christians and most religionists don't know the history of their own religion. And that puts them at a disadvantage of understanding it in the context of our modern lives and our modern world. And this is what Brian does in part in this book, is he gives you some history and he draws correlations on that. And one of the things he talks about is Constantine, for instance, being empirical and an empire builder, and that Christianity under Constantine was very militant and brutal even, and that the vestiges of that are still lingering somewhat with modern Christianity, this empirical thinking, that this ultimate us and them thinking. Pam just wrote on the board, you know, he kind of lays it out for all fundamentalism, not just Christian fundamentalism, but all fundamentalism and all religious empirical thinking. And what we know is the Arantia book would call that, you know, taking sovereignty, you know, religious sovereignty. And
there's some interesting quotes that Lou put up a link, and it's, you know, to Wikipedia article on him, which at least gives a nice thumbnail on Brian. And one quote here that's interesting from More Ready Than You Realize, a book that he wrote. I don't believe making disciples must equal making adherence to the Christian religion. It may be advisable in many, not all, circumstances to help people become followers of Jesus and remain within their Buddhist, Hindu, or Jewish contexts. Rather than resolving the paradox via pronouncements on the eternal destiny of people more convinced by or loyal to other religions than ours, we simply move on to help Buddhists, Muslims, Christians, and everyone else experience life to the full in the way of Jesus while learning it better myself. I would gladly become one of them, whoever they are, to whatever degree I can, to embrace them, to join them, to enter into their world without judgment, but with saving love as mine has been entered by the Lord.
Mm. Great quote from Brian.
I had a friend named Anne who used to say she was a Sikh. She would wear white and sometimes the turban, and she said, I used to tell people, she says, I'm a Sikh, but my guru is Jesus. And so I think that it is, I mean, I know Gandhi used to say that he really loved Jesus. It was Christianity that he had an issue with. There's another quote from another author who I would really like to get on the show, who I've pursued a few times and will continue to try to talk him into it. His name is Eboo Patel.
is the founder and president of the Interfaith Youth Corps and the author of Acts of Faith, Faith and Sacred Ground.
Mm.
And Eboo Patel is spelled E-B-O-O-P-A-T-E-L. He says, Brian doesn't shy away from the challenging issues regarding interfaith cooperation. This is a book to cherish, to read over and over, a book that sheds light and warmth on one of the most difficult questions of our era.
Mm.
And I have to say that it's really kind of a page-turner, a barn burner, and, you know, a book you really can't put down. So I recommend, if you have a chance before he comes on the air next week, to get a copy of the book. I highly recommend it so that you can call in with some relevant questions, because he's going to be with us for the full 2 hours, and our phone lines will be open. And we do invite you to tell your friends and tell their friends, and we'd like to get as many people on the air next week as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And
we have
for
it for the
next
full 2 hours.
Yeah.
Crystal?
Yeah.
Good. And
so,
let's give him an hour to, you know, I would like to just give him some time to fully talk about what he needs to talk about, and then have callers too.
So have our callers call in after the first hour.
Yeah, that's a great
idea. If you
want
to call in and listen, that's fine, but we don't want to interrupt him because he's going to have a lot of very meaty information to share with us.
Yes.
And
so
he's an excellent speaker, and a really prolific and engaging author. And so I think you'll really enjoy it.
And he just has that, you know, if you see Brian, when you're in person with Brian, he has that kind and loving face and just demeanor. He's so engaging and diplomatic and just warm and really a true Jesusonian, I think. It'll be such a pleasure to have him on. Thank you so much, Crystal, and for your tenacity.
And well, it's such an honor for him to have agreed to come on the air with us. So we're really thrilled about this next show next week. So again,
yeah,
we hope you'll all tune in, and we're very obviously very excited about having him with us. So
yeah,
mm-hmm,
it's a treat, and we're almost down to the end of this show today, and it was a lot of fun, and we thank all of our listeners today and everybody on the board. It was a great board today. We had just the most amazing conversation on the board, and I'm glad I can multitask.
Yeah.
And I really want to thank Tony Jones for this really exciting program that he's put together called Animate Faith. We also want to thank Spark House for their help with putting on our show today, and I'd like to thank Bruce, who wasn't able to get on the air with us, and Shane Hitz, who did join us for a short while.
Wonderful
and
interview with Shane.
Thank you so much, everyone, and we look forward to doing this again next week. So
yeah, very much, and please do spread the word. Let people know. Next week is Brian McLaren. It's going to be an important show. They won't want to miss it. If they
Saturday,
miss it, they
October 6th.
Yep.
At 10 a.m. Mountain Time, same time, same channel, same station.
Yeah, you may find as you know, my own daughter, actually both daughters consider themselves emergent Christians at this point in their career. They're both in their one's in late teens, the other early 20s, and please, you know, invite anyone who is, you know, may have emergent Christian children or may be emergent Christians themselves to tune into the show.
And even if you know nothing about emergent Christianity or Brian McLaren, you won't be disappointed if you call in and listen in. So until then, have a great week, and thanks for listening.
God bless you all, and goodbye for now.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Andre. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Cosmic Citizen, a radio program focused primarily on the study and discussion of the Urantia Book and its teachings. The Urantia Book is a religious text that claims to be written by angels and other superhuman personalities. If you are a Urantia Book reader or a spiritual seeker looking for new truth, we hope and pray you have been nourished and edified by our ministry. Please remember that the views expressed on this program do not reflect the official views and opinions of any Urantia organizations. There is no official interpretation of the Urantia Book. So all opinions expressed on this program exclusively reflect the personal biases of the hosts, guests, and callers who participate in these discussions. And remember, only a brave person is willing honestly to admit and fearlessly to face what a sincere and logical mind discovers.